Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome once again to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. We have a very, very exciting show today. And as those who listen to our show, you know the slogan for our show is, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. And you can join us by dialing 646-668-2948 for our listening audience, 664-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad, and that will bring you right into our studios. And as I indicated, you can also join us by listening to us on through Facebook, Twitter, and Link. We are streaming live on the Blog Talk Radio format from our nation's capital. And as I've indicated, we have a very, very exciting show for you today, for our listening audience. We have the privilege of having the campaign director for Oil Change International, Mr. David Turnbull. Mr. Turnbull is the campaign director for Oil Change International, working on both domestic and international campaigns to end fossil fuel subsidies and slow the spread of dirty energy money and fossil fuel infrastructure from the tar sands and fracking. Prior to his current position with Oil Change, David was an executive director of Climate Change Action Network International from 2008 to early 2012. At CAN International, he worked to coordinate the network for 700 NGOs in dozens of countries to develop and advocate for global solutions to climate crisis. Earlier, David was a communications director of the U.S. Climate Action Network, where he coordinated joint communications efforts for U.S. NGOs focused on climate change. Before joining the U.S. CAN, David worked with the World Rescue Institute as a coordinator for a pair of international networks working to promote inclusive and accountable environmental governance. In a previous occasion, David spent time on the mountaintop observing the world's worst weather and conducting climate research at Mount Washington Weather Observatory in New Hampshire. That is the background of this very dynamic young gentleman with Oil Change International. And for our listening audience, Oil Change brings unique industry expertise that allows the use of research and release timely, hard-hitting campaign relevant investigation countering corporate arguments for oil, gas, and coal development. Oil Change engages in domestic and international policy forums to push and shift public finances away from fossil fuels and toward clean energy. Oil Change provides experience and leadership in organizing resistance to the political influence of fossil fuel industry, particularly here in the U.S. Okay? This is a statement of Mr. David Turnbull, campaign director for Oil Change International. He added, the move before the 45th administration, that's how we like to refer to the present administration, this move is nothing more that eventual act to erase President Obama's legacy. Pulling out of the Paris Agreement makes no sense diplomatically, strategically, and substantively. Trump's administration is running away from one of the most critical negotiations in a global community, and the country, other countries won't quickly forget this. Now, as they would, people always use the term, without further ado, Mr. Turnbull, welcome to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here. Good morning.
You wrote a blitzing, very blitzing article, and people can log on to our website at www.pc.com. That web address is www.pc.com. Click on our news and events section, and you will be able to scroll down, and you will be able to see this very, very powerful article that was written by Mr. Turnbull, Reaction, All Change International Response to Trump's Pullout of the Paris Agreement. I'd like for you to sort of go into how you see this playing out, David. What do you think possessed the 45 and his administration to pull out, other than more cash in their pockets? Because if they're not the water barriers for the oil fossil fuel industry, I don't think I've ever seen an administration that has made it very, very clear with bringing Scott Pruitt, former Attorney General from Oklahoma, the head EPA, who sued EPA 14 times, and Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, who is known to, and both of them are known to have ties to the fossil fuel and oil companies. I mean,
just like they hired the Secretary
of the State Department. I mean, he came straight out of Exxon. So what does this mean for us as American citizens, and how do you see this thing playing out?
Well, you know, we at Oil Change International have for a long time been raising the alarm about the influence of the oil industry in American politics. And what the 45th administration is doing is just making that all the more clear. Instead of having influence being peddled in back rooms and under the covers, they've put into the administration oil executives like Rex Tillerson and people who are just entirely tied to the oil industry like Scott Pruitt and Rick Perry. So, you know, what that means is that our entire energy policy is being run essentially by the oil industry under this administration. And so what that means is that we've seen regulations being cut all over the place that are going to be putting communities at risk and our climate in peril. And then most recently, the pullout of the Paris Agreement. You know, my statement was blistering, to be sure, because this is just, it's a stupid and really just unconscionable move. The Paris Agreement is an agreement that was negotiated between, you know, close to 200 countries around the world. It puts forward goals and plans that are critical to safeguarding our climate. But one of the other things is that the Paris Agreement isn't even strong enough to truly safeguard our future. And so what the administration has done is said that they don't even want to do the bare minimum when it comes to addressing climate change. And that's just terrible and really unconscionable. So, you know, we put out a statement that really, you know, I think tried to expose how horrible a decision this is. You know, I think a part of it is simply 45 doesn't want to do anything that President Obama had anything to do with. He wants to undermine all of the policies that President Obama helped to put into place, and the Paris Agreement was one of those. The positive side of that, though, is that when the administration, when 45 announced the plans to pull out of the Paris Agreement, we saw a swift and strong reaction from governors, from mayors, from business leaders, from public citizens, all saying how terrible of a decision that was. But more importantly, also saying that those states and cities and businesses are going to be moving forward implementing the Paris Agreement, whether or not 45 stays in it in the first place. So, you know, there are so many people in the United States and around the world, huge states like California, where I'm based, businesses that are all moving ahead towards a clean energy economy. And, you know, 45 can throw tantrums and pull out of agreements, but the reality is that the world is moving ahead.
Well, it's clear. I've been beating the drum here on the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America to get the African-American community in more engaged around the issue of renewable energy. And a study was done by the NAACP Environmental Justice Project, and they talked about the fact that you have communities of color being more adversely affected by climate change. And that article went on to state that within a 35 to 70 miles radius of any community of color, and specifically in the 19 southern states where you have approximately 7% of the African American population residing in this country, you have a nuclear biomass or coal burning plant that spills these very dangerous toxins into the air. And because of that, you have higher rates with African American youth with asthma, emphysema, and we have higher cancer rates because of these toxins in the air. Also, this also affects your property value if you happen to have to live in one of those communities and you have a home in one of those communities, your property values. So this thing has tentacles, especially when we begin to look at the fact that President Obama's administration, the biggest thing that his administration did was not the Affordable Care Act, which is known by most folks as Obamacare, but it was the Sunshine Identity Program, which that initiative pumped $30 billion in federal government loan guarantees, and he tied it into the Department of Defense. And because you live in California, you're very aware that this project came online 10 years ahead of time. That project, the 2010 MG Majestic project with the Department of Navy, was scheduled to come online in 2025. It came online in 2015. And from that, it is generating enough energy. It was the largest investment of capital in the history of this country to build a huge utility-scale solar farm, which generates enough energy to power 750,000 homes. But it is being used to power 12 military installations in the state of California, and the savings will be somewhere close to $1 billion over the next 10 years, according to the article that was put out by the Department of Energy. So when we begin to look at the issues of renewable portfolio standards, which for our listening audience, that legislation, though that is legislation that has to be passed by their local municipalities in order to require that a certain percentage of the energy that is generated through their local utility must come from renewable sources. I had the privilege of having a gentleman on from CERTS Trade who last week, Mr. Tom McKinty, manager for business development operations, he talked about the components of creating a CERTS marketplace. So you need net metering legislation, which you have about 41 states that have some form of mandates put in place, but you also need other things such as you must have the ability to find the local utility company, and you must give value to those fines, which creates the marketplace. But when we began to look at the move by the 45th administration, by them pulling out of this Paris Agreement, it sends a clear signal to those seven states that don't have renewable portfolio standards that they don't have to push for with moving legislation, which would create a conducive renewable energy market specifically in the solar area. And we don't have to talk about global warming. It is burning up here in the nation's capital with these 90-degree weathers. It was 95 degrees yesterday. But according to 45's administration, there's no such thing as global warming. So where do you see these things moving as it relates to the states and other groups, advocacy groups, pushing for renewable portfolio standards, specifically in those southern states that are somewhat tied to the natural gas and oil companies' hips?
That's right. I mean, I think the exciting thing is that the market is clearly showing that fossil fuels are going to be a thing of the past if they aren't already. We're seeing solar power become far cheaper than it ever was. We're seeing wind power become priced comparable to fossil fuels. And, you know, it's clear that renewable energy is the future. The states that came out strongly when 45 pulled out of the Paris Agreement are saying that, look, regardless of what he does, we know where the future is. We know where our economy needs to go. And it's going to benefit the states to move in that direction because it's inevitable that the rest of the world is going to be going in that direction as well. So, you know, our push and our call is for states around the country to think about what they're actually doing for their constituents, for the people in their states, and not really pay attention to what 45 is doing, because it's so clear where his interests lie, because you only have to look at his cabinet to see the oil industry infiltrating it. So, you know, you were talking about the armed services earlier and the investments that they've made. The ironic thing about 45's climate denial is that his own military leaders already say that climate change is a massive national security threat. And as you said, as you pointed out, they're investing heavily in renewable energy to save them money, to make sure that they're not, being tied to oil in a way that makes them vulnerable to price shocks and variability in the market. And, you know, the same goes for natural gas as well. While it may sound clean, natural gas is a dirty fuel too. We put out reports that show that if we continue to build out our natural gas infrastructure along the East Coast, we're going to blow past our climate goals and the limits that science puts for us if we want to address climate change. So really the only future that we are safe to take is one that's a renewable energy future. And, you know, as you know, being in D.C., the sun shines for sure, and solar energy is certainly the future for them.
Well, the Solar Industry Trade Association, SEIA, put out a report that indicated that in 2016, the solar industry generated $200 billion for the U.S. economy and $1.4 trillion internationally. As you know, the name of this show is called Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact on Black America. Now, what is very, very disturbing to me is that the last report that was put out by the American Association of Blacks in Energy, they put out a study in 2009 that indicated that African Americans in this country spent $41 billion for energy. That comes across all forms of energy, gas, electricity, and the renewable, whether it be wind turbine, hydrogenetics, or solar. But we only had 1.1% of the jobs and 0.8% of the wealth which was realized from that. Now, I have had this discussion on these airways, and I've been beating the drum about the fact that the Solar Foundation, which collects the data on employment on this solar and renewable energy industry, indicated that in 2016-15 were approximately 270,000 people working in the solar renewable energy, around 260,000. There were other statistics that were put out by the Labor Department that you have now, in 2016, approximately 370,000 people working in industry. So that this industry has been the quickest industry growing employment base in the country. It has grown at a 20 to 25% rate. One out of every 50 new jobs created in this country has been created around the solar and renewable energy industry. My pet peeve and my problem with that is that it showed clearly that in 2015, the data said the employment base breakdown statistics were 23.8% women, 11.3% Hispanics, 8.3% Pacific Islanders and Asians, 8.3% veterans, but when it came to the African American community, we only comprise 6.6% of the jobs in that industry. Out of the installation companies, and that is really where our company, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, that is one of our sole missions, is to grow market share for the African-American-owned solar installation companies in this industry. Out of 9,929 companies, you only had 9 African-American-run solar installation companies doing business in the continental U.S. And I've had most of those companies, their owners, have come on the airways of this show, Solar Now in the Future. Fortunately, here in the DMV market area, we have 5 of those 9 companies. You have Mr. Mark Davis of WDC Solar, who has started offices in Atlanta and in Baltimore and New York. You have Mr. Gilbert Campbell of Bold Energy, Mr. David Strand of Alternative Solar Solution, and Daryl Green, former Hall of Famer, NFL Hall of Famer with TGLS. This company, all these companies also are construction companies and developers. So one of the things that we've been working with is trying to get our historically black colleges and universities, which there's 100 of them, there was 106, we're losing them every day, to look at how that they can utilize leveraging the money that they're presently already spending to offset their high energy costs and build solar farms, utility-sized solar farms in the deeper South. But that is why the need for renewable portfolio standards and everything else that you need, because this does not encourage the development of those type of large-scale facilities. Even though Obama's administration put that $30 billion in loan guarantees, you have approximately almost 4,000 large-scale utility scale of farms being built across the U.S. One just opened up in Cumberland, North Carolina on I-64, 486 acres. And that particular farm, we have two world-renowned universities here in the District of Columbia, American University and George Washington University, George Washington Hospital, partnered with Duke Energy, and they're now getting their energy, a large percentage of their energy, to power that and the lights at those universities from a PPA power purchase agreement that they launched back in 2014. Unfortunately, our HBCU presidents didn't get the memo until they ran into the Department of Energy on January 17, 2017, 3 days before 45 took office, and signed the Memorandum of Understanding, and it got S-canned. So these are the type of domestic initiatives that are being pushed to the wayside because of the 45's pulling out of the Paris Agreement, which sort of puts the U.S. in, well, we really don't have to maintain the Sunshine Initiative programs and the funding for those programs, because there was about $26 billion over at DOE to assist in launching these type of programs. So has your organization, All Change International, looked at that aspect of how this pulling out of the Paris Agreement will affect those domestic initiatives in the U.S.?
You know, well, first of all, I just got to say I grew up in the D.C. area, and hearing Daryl Green's name is really exciting. I'm so glad that he's in the solar industry. He was a hero of mine growing up. But, you know, on those programs that you're talking about, you know, we haven't looked closely at the implications from renewable energy, but what we have looked at is how much the U.S. government is spending to support fossil fuels. So you're talking about $20 billion. You're talking about different programs that are helping to support renewable energy, which are creating new jobs, which are creating jobs at a faster clip than fossil fuels creates jobs. But when you look at fossil fuels, the U.S. government is spending billions upon billions of dollars to prop up that industry, which, if they didn't have those subsidies, would actually be on its way out. We just put out a report last month that talks about all of the subsidies that are going to support fossil fuel production on public lands. That's publicly owned land, waters, offshore drilling and drilling on our Bureau of Land Management lands. And what we found is that there are some $7 billion a year that the U.S. is spending of taxpayer dollars to help support oil and gas and coal drilling on those public lands. And that's, you know, after some 100 years of subsidizing the oil industry, we're still doing it at a huge clip. One of the other really impressive and scary numbers that we dug up is that if there were to be a major spill in the Gulf of Mexico due to the offshore drilling, the U.S. could be on the hook for some $35 billion of liability because of the way that they've structured different loans and liabilities with oil companies drilling in the Gulf. And so, you know, when you talk about the numbers of dollars supporting renewable energy, it's actually pretty much dwarfed by the amount of money spent by the U.S. government to prop up the fossil fuel industry. And so we've been working hard to try to stop those subsidies and really level the playing field.
Well, I really appreciate what the work that Oil Change International is doing in that arena in terms of trying to come up with hard numbers to educate the American public on how the fossil fuel industry is basically being propped up, but with our tax dollars, that at the same toxin during the refining process is killing us. Now, when we talk about impact, most people have forgotten completely about the BP spill in the Gulf. Very few people now even mention the fact that there's still dramatic effects, specifically when it comes to the African-American community. And the oil companies, I know for a fact, because Reverend Walter Fauntleroy's brother has been an outstanding advocate for advocating the getting help for African-American communities in Florida, Alabama, and Louisiana, along the coast that have been affected by that oil spill. And those communities are still suffering. Have y'all done any studies or research on that impact?
We've done some research that looked at some of the ways that BP is trying to shirk responsibility for that massive spill. One of the things that they did, which is really just sneaky and devious, is the way that they ended up negotiating the settlement with the U.S. government for the fines and penalties that they had to pay for that, the spill and all of the ways that they were responsible for it. They were able to write off in their taxes a massive amount, a massive portion of those penalties. So in other words, they were able to cite in their taxes the penalty for spilling oil in the Gulf and really wreaking havoc on communities along the Gulf Coast. They were able to write that off as a business expense. That should not be a business expense. That is not normal business practice. That should not be included as something that you can write off and lower your tax liability with. So we've done some work to try to expose that fact and the way in which companies can try to shirk responsibility when they do such terrible damage to communities. And we've worked with folks in Louisiana and other parts of the Gulf Coast and Mississippi to really try to expose the human impact, the community impact that spill continues to have even to this day. I mean, you have shippers and fishermen and others that really rely on a healthy Gulf that are still struggling to come back from that disaster. And meanwhile, BP, who was responsible for it, largely was able to escape a lot of the penalties that they deserve.
Well, as we know, we got the best Congress that money can buy. And I mean, it comes right down to understanding the power of the oil industry and lobbyists. But what has been very, very disturbing to me since we built this platform to see the lack of, I would say, collaboration from the renewable energy industry and those companies that are operating in the industry coming together around dealing with building advocacy with our young millennials, because clearly, other than them coming up with a quick little niches of talking about the issue of climate change and the what the temperature degrees that we need to keep the earth under because of the ozone and all the emissions from these toxic plants, coal, nuclear, biomass, and how it affects the environment. we have to come up with a way to show how this economically hits people in their pocket every day. Joe Sixpack. Because if you don't, it seems as though it goes in one ear and out the other. Now, George Siever, who is a noted economist, has written a piece called The Great Energy Disturbance, and he talks about how the renewable technologies will affect transportation and energy. And as you were talking about a little earlier, that one of the goals, which is very, very ambitious through President Obama's Sunshine Initiative Identity Program, was to bring the cost of solar down to about 6.6 cents a kilowatt hour. They surpassed that before he left office. It's around 5 cents. So it's oil companies cannot compete, but I'm looking at the new emerging industry with electric vehicles, and I had the privilege of hearing the CEO for BMW on Charlie Rose's show about a month ago, came on late at night, and he was talking about the fact that most people think Tesla is the number one manufacturer for electric vehicles. He says, no, we are, but we cater to the upscale market, but we are now targeting the regular working class market because everybody's coming out with a vehicle priced around $35,000. And that is what Mr. Sievers spoke about, using charts and graphs to show how quickly by 2025 they're talking about everything that will be coming off the assembly lines, whether it's buses, trucks, cars, will have this driverless technology. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on the millennial. Our millennials coming, if they're not prepared with what is coming down the pipe. So oil change, I know that what you're focused on and what you do, but I think it would be something that would be good for oil change to look at how the $7 billion that they're using on public lands and the tax dollars that we are as taxpayers are being put on the hook for, if those type of dollars could be talked about being moved into our high schools, in our STEM programs, to educate our people about what's coming, because surely U.S. economy is getting ready to get blindsided. And if people aren't aware of what's coming, I think it's going to be devastating. It's amazing to me how quick the 30 minutes can go, and I'm not going to take any of your precious time, sir, but I want to thank you for taking time from your business schedule to join us on the airways of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. And in closing, would you share some information with our listening audience? Because I think they need to know that you have organizations out there such as Oil Change International, and they all do some outstanding work in what you do. Because if you cannot build public opinion around public policy, then you can't change this game.
That's right. Yeah, you can find out more information about Oil Change International at our website at www.priceofoil.org. And you can follow us on Twitter at Price of Oil, or on Facebook at facebook.com/priceofoil. We work hard to try to expose the true price of oil on our communities and on our economy and on our climate. And we're working hard to stop pipelines, to make sure that 45 doesn't get its way, and we're working hard to work with communities to stand up to the oil industry.
Well, I just want to ask you one other question before you go. What is, because see, with 45, I call it, I'm an old football coach, so we used to call it the Statue of Liberty. We run the play one way, but it comes, ball comes back the other way. What is happening with the Montana pipeline, with the situation that the standoff with the Native Americans there? Because it seemed to have gone away about them putting that pipeline up on that river there, which is going to affect millions of our people out into the Midlands, because that supplies water for so many states out in Mid-America. What is the status of that?
You know, unfortunately, 45 pushed it through. And while there was an amazing effort by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other Native Americans and other water protectors in the Dakotas to try to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline, it has actually started running oil. But the crazy thing, which is crazy but also is exactly what we expected, is that within days of the Dakota Access Pipeline being completed and oil running through it, it already started to leak. We knew it was going to leak, and it did. It wasn't huge leaks, but it's an indication of what we can expect to come. So while that pipeline is in operation, it's rather unfortunate, of course. The work that the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other water protectors did to really raise attention to the Dakota Access Pipeline and to really inspire a movement of water protectors and pipeline fighters continues. The work continues. There are pipelines being proposed around the country, and I think that the efforts to try to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline will pay dividends in trying to stop other pipelines as well.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing that information, because, you know, this old saying is called out of sight, out of mind, and it sort of has moved away from major media. They've moved on, because every other day, 45 got another drama. He's a drama queen, so we understand that. And I want to thank you, Mr. Turnbull, for taking time from your busy schedule to join us on the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for all the work you're doing.
And that was Mr. David Turnbull of Oil Change International. Well, we have a shorter version of our show today. And for our listening audience, we're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back. And for the next segment of our show, we'll be dealing with a letter that was written by Betty Ann.
Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got to sing it.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. And you can log on to our website at www.positivechangepc.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We are streaming live from your nation's capital, And as we said, the slogan for our show is power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Well, talking about financial benefits, we're going to turn our attention now to a letter that was written by Betty Ann Kane, Chairman of the Public Service Commission, letter to Chairman Middleton, D.C. Council, to reverse the $7.5 million from the Renewable Energy Development Fund, and which was reprogrammed to the District General Fund. Now, I had Mrs. Anna Schulman last week on the airways of this show talking about the vote that took place on yesterday. I'm first going to read to you the letter that was written to Councilman Chair Mendelson by the Chair, Mrs. Betty Ann Kane of the Public Service Commission, the day before. Dear Chairman Mendelson, I'm writing you to repeat my strong opposition to your proposal to take $7.5 million from the Renewable Energy Development Fund and move it to the General Fund for fiscal year 2018 budget. Please vote tomorrow to right this wrong, because it was wrong, very wrong. The money in the Renewable Energy Development Fund is restricted by law for the use in developing renewable energy resources, and in particular to support the Solar for All program to lower the electricity bills of at least 100,000 low-income district resident consumers. The Renewable Energy Development Fund was specifically set up by the council to operate without physical year limitation. This fund is supposed to have a balance at the end of the fiscal year. It's the best way to allow multi-year planning and commitment support to projects that don't have to stop and start every 12 months. The money in the Renewable Energy Fund comes from the electricity ratepayers. Retail electricity suppliers have to pay the alternative compliance fee into a fund and pass the cost on to their customers, because there are not enough solar facilities in the district from which they can purchase solar renewable energy credits. There, again, comes in the issue of certs. So taking the money sets up a vicious circle. It isn't used to support solar facilities, so there are fewer facilities which search to sell to suppliers, so the suppliers and their customers have to pay more compliance fees, never closing the gap, and costing customers more and more each year. DC customers paid $15 million extra because of the shortfall in the D.C.-based solar facilities in 2016. Our consultants estimate that D.C. residents and businesses already pay 10% more for electricity because of the cost of RPS, including alternative compliance fees. Saying that is okay because more money will come in next year to pay for this year's projects doesn't help either. It just means that the customers are paying twice for the same thing. The council raised the alternative compliance fee last year, keeping it all its high at a high level through 2023. The least you can do is guarantee that it will all be used to, as intended, purposes to develop more renewable energy for all parts of the city and eliminate the growing shortfall of the DC-based solar and the need for more and more fees to be passed on to electric consumers. After that embarrassing report of the D.C. auditor last year, which found that almost $40 million has been diverted by the council from the REDF fund in its initial years. I was pleased to see that the practice had stopped in fiscal year 2017 and was not supposed proposed by the mayor for fiscal 2018. Whatever could be the justification for proposing this wrong practice again, the Renewable Energy Fund is not a piggy bank to be raided at all. Please reverse this wrong. Betty Ann Kane, Chairman, Public Service Commission of the District of Columbia. Well, I want our listening audience to know that we have Mrs. Betty Ann Kane scheduled to be on the airways of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America next week. And I think that you need to be tuning in to hear her bring some sanity to insanity. Because I did personally a phone bank, and I called almost every member of the city council over the last 2 days, as many as I could reach yesterday. I called everyone and did a phone bank to see where they would fall on this decision. And every one of them voted to support Mendelson's move. Now, that seems like it's a conflict of interest as you look at wards 8, 7, and 5, especially where the African-American communities resides in the district, because I had the director of the Department of Energy and Environment on this show less than 3 weeks ago, Director Tommy Wells, and he indicated that $13 million is supposed to go out in June. They just released a $950,000 grant to Grid Alternatives, which is supposed to be used to train 75 D.C. residents to become solar installation installers and to 100 low and moderate income residents go solar in wards 5, 7, and 8. When you read this letter, it shows and it brings some clarity why the District of Columbia does not have the search facilities. Now, I understand, based on Mrs. Alan Schulman coming on these airways last week, and she did an excellent job in educating the listening audience to this issue. But our community need to get on the ball with finding out what's going on around the solar and renewable energy industry here in the District of Columbia. Because if you do not go to 1629 Benning Road to Grid Alternatives, tell them about this program, I don't know how they're getting the information out. I've asked Mrs. Nicole Steele, the executive director for Mid-Atlantic, to come on this show to talk about how they plan to roll this program out and engage the African-American community in the District of Columbia. But that's D.C. We've also reached out for Mrs. Magruder in Annapolis, Maryland, to talk about the funding in the state of Maryland. And she has told me in so many words that she didn't have time to speak with the African-American community because she's too busy. But I'm quite sure those who are Maryland residents would like to know that you have some similar issues going on in the state of Maryland, and the African-American community in the state of Maryland needs to get also engaged, and the state of Virginia. You have the same issues surrounding these programs which President Obama administration, through the Sunshine Identity Initiative, put millions of dollars to assist low and moderate income communities to go solar. So on that note, we're going to be closing out this show today because, as I indicated, this is sort of an abbreviated version of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we say, we try to bring to our listening audience news that they can use. And we will have some very, very exciting shows coming up in the near future surrounding a number of issues, because as the African American community, we're always talking about our relationship with the continent. I have reached out to Mr. Fred Olodende with his organization, Democracy in Africa, and we're trying to get someone to come on to talk about the use of solar to industrialize Africa. So I want to go back again and see if I can get him on the airways to talk about this thing, because he has a very, very unique perspective about the issues of energy on the continent. And he shared some of those yesterday, and they were generation of energy, the transmission of energy, the distribution of energy, and you must have consumers that can afford that energy. And when you begin to look at each one of those elements, it's the reason why we don't have the energy capacity in the 50 African nations on the continent. And I think it's imperative for us to begin to engage conversation around these issues of manufacturing and trade and global warming change as it relates to the continent of Africa. So these are some of the shows that we'll be pushing forward to bring to the listening airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we're hoping that we will be able to get a little more engagement from our listening audience. And remember, our call-in number is 646-668-2948. And we'll be trying to do a better job to get the information on our guests for our upcoming shows up on our social media through Facebook, Twitter, so the people will be able to call in and engage this program. We realize that the Blog Talk format is not the same as broadcasting over live radio. Even though this is live radio, it's not the same as broadcasting on or through the airways of radio in a marketplace. So we're somewhat challenged because people, everybody didn't have a computer, and everybody's not as technical. But as we say, we attempt to bring news that you can use. And if you would log on to our website at www.positivechangepc.com, please go to our look at our GoFundMe page and look at our HBCU radio initiative and support that, because we urgently need your support in order to move this format to the very next level. And I think that we bring issues to the forefront each week that hit locally and nationally as it relates to the African American community, because for some strange reason, that two terms with President Obama, but our HBCUs didn't get the presidents didn't get the memo about moving forward with a lot of initiatives until the very last minute. And with 45 administration alive, I don't know how well it is, but I know they're kicking. There's some issues there. So once again, thank you for those who will take the time to come to the airways of Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. Till next week, go in peace.
Someone singing, I can just sing it. Life is a song worth singing, why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand, use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan, change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.